So hello and welcome to part two of Tibbles Nibbles lockdown edition, where we talk about pubs. I think at this point we are going to delve a little bit more into pub snacks and drinks, and probably more of the same chat and humour as we managed to put into the first one.
Oh. Tibbles Nibbles always makes me so hungry.
You've got to have steak.
Don't eat rice in pubs.
Yeah, what, as in beef tallow.
Tibbles Nibbles. Wow, he loves his food.
And now we need to talk about other food, so pub snacks.
Pub snacks. I mean, you've actually made some homemade scratchings that are sitting in front of us at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is complementing my beer very nicely. Are there any others, really?
Well, I mean, I told you this story a little bit earlier on, but I actually got into a bit of a dispute with my local when I lived in Chiswick. There's a pub called the City Barge on Strand-on-the-Green. And it was notable for two things. One, despite the fact it being a Fuller's pub and within literal spitting distance of the Fuller's Brewery, they once ran out of beer, which is quite impressive. The other thing was, I used to get into an argument with them quite regularly because I used to bring my own scratchings because they didn't sell port scratchings in a pub. And I was absolutely incensed. I'd only been living in London about 7 months at this point. I genuinely didn't understand how a pub could be open without selling port scratchings. It would be like McDonald's not selling a Big Mac.
Look here, yeah, I'm from the West Midlands. I'm bringing my snacks with me.
Exactly. That's exactly what I did. And I told them, you know, they used to get a bit shirty with me because I didn't have, because I wouldn't buy their crisps. I'm like, well, I don't want crisps. I'm drinking bitter. I want scratchings. And I said, go out and buy a tray of scratchings and I'll buy all of them over the course of a couple of weeks. And I did, and they did. But yeah, you've got to have crisps and nuts, I think.
To be fair, though, Chris, I tried that once by bringing my own beer into a pub, and they weren't really very happy with that either.
I think that might be a slightly different.
No, I see the landlord's point of view, but actually, no, you're right. He should get some in, or she. What about scampi fries?
Scampi fries, yes.
I've only ever eaten scampi fries in pubs.
I would like to say that's true, but you bought me a whole tray of scampi fries once.
That's because you told me you needed them for medical reasons.
I did need them for medical reasons.
You told me you needed snacks for medical reasons. So I bought you two of the whole paper packets, you pull them off.
Yeah.
And then like a box of scratchings or something.
Yeah, well, and some of the, what were the cheese ones called? Like the cheese triangles.
Cheesy moments,
I think they were, yeah.
I never liked them.
No, they were nice to break up the slightly odd taste of the scampi fries, but
scampi fries are wonderful. I say scampi fries are what I used to eat in pubs. I never actually used to really eat them in pubs. I used to eat them with a Panda Pop sat outside pubs.
Yes.
On holiday while my granddad and mum and dad were having a pint inside in the times when you couldn't put children inside any pub whatsoever.
Yeah, so, yeah. That is true, actually.
Oh, let's go on holiday for a couple of weeks. Yeah, okay. Oh, what are you going to do? Oh, I'll just sit on a bench with a Panda Pop and a bag of scampi fries while you all have a drink for a couple of hours.
That is living the life, my friend. That is living the life. But I do think you need peanuts.
What do you think about those sort of cardboard things they go in with that sort of has Sam Fox behind there? So when you sort of pull the nuts off certain places, you get to see a scantily clad lady.
I think the world's moved on a little bit from those.
Yeah, it has, hasn't it? But there's no why haven't they replaced it with something else?
That's a very good point.
Like, why isn't there, like, I don't know, a nice vista of Snowdonia behind there or something like
what,
that?
Well, I mean, to be fair, when was the last time you saw any food on a card hung behind a pub? They're pretty much all like now stacked up nicely in the bar back because, you know, presentation's important.
I like to see it on a card. I like to see the bags of nuts, scampi fries, cheesy moments on cards.
So you very much prefer those than those big Kilner jars full of things?
Yeah, Kilner jars where everyone's just dipping their hands in and just, yeah, I hate all that.
No, I was more thinking about the ones behind the bar where they have a little scoop.
I'm talking about the ones behind the bar. I'm not talking about, that's the other Checkers thing, isn't it? Putting food on the bar.
Yes.
But
I think I experienced this once. So
they put on a Sunday after their beef slick, oil slick roast dinner, any roast potatoes that were left over would then be put into bowls and placed on the bar for people just to have a munch on while they're ordering a pint.
Nice. Was there any kind of dip to go with them, or apart from urine?
No. Yeah, well, exactly. No, I mean, It's bad enough when you put peanuts on the bun. Yeah. These were whole roast potatoes. What's the etiquette? Do you break one up? Just take a piece of it?
No, you take the whole thing and shove it in your mouth.
Yeah, but that's it. But you've got to share it, haven't you? So, you know.
No. No, you don't. You just eat them all.
What are we talking about? Snacks in bars?
Snacks in pubs.
Yes, the jars behind the bar I don't like.
Yeah.
I think that better for the environment, I guess, because you're not individually wrapping things.
Yeah.
But I think it's actually a style over substance thing where people like myself, you've got sort of I've got a mild nut allergy, but some people are way more serious than me.
Yeah.
You don't want things being mixed around. Like, you know, if you've got a sealed packet, because I can eat peanuts. I like peanuts, especially dry roasted. But it always annoys me when, you know, they sort of double dip the scoop or even just using their hands out of the kind of the almonds and Brazil nuts. And then they use those on the peanuts. Yeah. It's like, well, no, you know, I don't want to eat all that stuff. The wasabi peas are nice if they've got those. I'm a big fan of a wasabi pea, but only in a gastric.
Yeah.
I'll have those with my pig's ears and trotters. Thanks very much.
Okay, so what else is important in a pub? Well,
But the one thing that's really important in a pub is good beer, as far as I'm concerned.
And we were just getting onto that.
Yeah.
So, in terms of beer selection, what should there be?
Well, I've kind of changed with the times, really, and I really like. And actually, let's go back. Let's talk about a lot of things. I'll talk about the Albion that is near where I work in Kingston. I think the Albion is actually the perfect pub. It does really good food.
Yeah.
You know, some bog standard stuff, some stuff that's a little bit more adventurous, and they are always trying something new.
Yeah.
Especially with their burger of the week. I mean, sometimes it's really tragic, but sometimes it's really good.
So give me some examples of good and bad.
They did a spicy chicken burger.
Okay.
That had a sort of slightly sriracha mayonnaise, like a sriracha mayonnaise, Asian slaw. You know, not the kind of thing I would normally order, but it's like, well, why not? And that was nice. They did one that had sort of a sausage patty, like a McMuffin, on top of the burger. So it's like a pork and beef burger.
Interesting.
And that was nice. Like,
yeah, I'd order that.
Yeah, that was pretty good. But then there's a chain of burgers in Japan called Moss Burger.
Yes.
And they're quite famous for making. They have burgers where the buns are actually rice.
Right.
Like compacted together and fried. So it becomes a sort of crispy dough almost.
Yeah.
I know my wife goes crazy for those back in Japan. They did sort of their version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big chunky beef burger, no problems with that. And then it was, kind of like two half buns of rice. But it was big chunky buns, and there must have been, because the rice obviously gets really sort of squishy and glutinous and everything. I mean, I'm a big eater, and I felt physically full to being sick after eating one burger. Because looking at it, I suddenly realised that the way the rice is compacted and squished to create this, I must have eaten, on the back of a packet of rice, it always says, like, you know, allow 50 grams per person. I mean, I always eat more than that anyway, but I reckon I ate half a packet of rice in one burger. You know, looking at it, I suddenly realised that it was probably 6 or 7 bowls of rice compacted down.
Right.
So they hadn't quite worked that one out. So that's probably the worst one. The other one they used to do a brisket. A slice of brisket on top, but the brisket was never cooked enough, i.e. it wasn't slow cooked enough, so it just fell apart.
Yes.
So you bite into it, and you literally couldn't bite through the brisket bit.
Right.
So that was, again, pointless. If you can't eat a burger by picking up, if you need a knife and fork to eat a burger, it's not a burger.
Yes.
I mean, I know you have rules on that.
I do have very strong rules. We're going to talk about burgers another time.
We'll save those. The one thing the Albion do really well is they do a selection of pizzas.
Yeah.
And they do 2 for 1 on a Monday night.
Yeah.
Which, you know, especially if I've got a trip or something going out to the theatre afterwards, whatever, it's always a jump in there. So for £5 you can get a pizza if you're sharing with someone else. And they brew their own beer. They also get lots of other craft beers in.
Yes.
So you know I'm a really big fan of Five Points Brewery in Hackney. Their pale ale, I think, is absolutely the best beer.
Yeah.
And sometimes they have that in the Albion. So at the other times they have their own beers, and they do some. They've got a pale ale at the moment. I can't remember the name of it, but I was drinking that only a couple of days ago. They've gone takeaway, incidentally.
Okay.
Because
they
brew their own beer. So if anyone is in the Kingston area and wants to nip in, socially distant from everybody else, and get a 2-pint milk carton of beer, they're doing those now behind the bar.
Just make sure you rinse the milk out completely.
That's a stout then, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so it definitely has to have decent beers. So we're talking a couple of lagers.
No
lagers. You're happy with no lagers?
No, I think, I mean, I would be. I do like a lager. I like a cold bottle of lager.
Right.
On a summer's day, There's nothing fine. I do go drinking with lager fans, so
yeah.
Then yeah, put my lager on tap.
Yeah. And then in terms of beer, so a lot of it needs to be a pale ale?
Definitely a mixture of pale ales and IPAs.
Yeah.
There needs to be a stout.
Yes.
Especially in the winter.
Yeah.
And I would suggest a couple of different local / small batch ciders.
Yeah. It's interesting how the best bitter has disappeared off the menu. It used to be you get a good pint of best somewhere, and it's just not a... It ceases to be a thing.
Yeah, you like a pint of mild as well.
I do.
You?
I love a pint of mild. And when was the last time you saw a pint of Banks's mild?
Well,
anywhere.
That was probably the last one I saw. When did you see a pint of mild that wasn't Banks's?
Oh, that's a very good question. I have seen one. I'm sure I have. But I think it was actually at a beer festival.
We've had chats about this before, though, haven't we? In the fact that, you know, I know you don't drink, you know, I know you're not drinking anymore, but yeah. Even when you were, you quite liked a low-alcohol session ale that still had flavour.
Yeah,
and they're very
much.
Hard to get hold of.
Yeah, they are. I mean, the fashion now is for stronger beer, but I remember what Banks is 2.7? Something like that. I think it's less than 3% for sure. And in fact, one of the best beers I've ever had, and if you can find it, I do thoroughly recommend you try it, is the Brentwood Brewery's BBC 2, which I think was 2.5%, and I tried at a beer festival down in Bridport in Dorset, and it was absolutely outstanding. Very light. Still definitely a beer rather than a lager. Lovely flavour. You could literally drink it all day.
There's a beer that the Albion do. Big Smoke Brewery, I think the brewery they do.
Yeah.
It's called Cold Spark.
Right.
And it's just over 3. So a little stronger than what you're talking
yeah.
about. But compared to what the rest of the stuff they do, it's a little lower. And it's really, really nice. Really nice.
Yeah, I suppose the fashion is no longer to do like proper big sessions in pubs.
Mm.
It's not normal now to go, right, we're going to the pub as we used to fairly regularly. Saturday was in the pub and you get there for lunch or just after lunch and you drink through until closing. And you probably couldn't do that with, you know, what, 5-7% IPA.
I've tried, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. Even to a hardened drinker like myself, it catches up with you.
Yeah, I still remember drinking Old Roger.
Is that a cider? Oh, no. That's, yes, I know. Yeah,
Marston's Old Roger in the Virgin Tavern in Worcester, which is one of the nastiest pubs I think I've ever had the fortune to be in.
I'm a big fan. I worked there for many years and had some great times there. I won't have you diss the Virgin Tavern.
I'm not saying it wasn't good. It was just terrifying in
the
so
only
many ways.
Virgin, the only virgin in Tolladine, they used to say.
That's very true, but Old Roger was what? I mean, that was known as being...
Eight something percent.
I don't think it was even that strong.
We were only supposed to serve it in halves, which actually was weird then, but there's a lot of places that do that now.
Yeah.
Like Brewdog, for example, the stronger the beer, the less quantity you get.
Yes.
The same £20 for a pint.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Euston Tap was always very interesting for doing, I don't know how many 30-odd beers or how many it is that they do now.
I like the Euston Tap.
Yeah, it's a lovely place, really great beers. But you would wind up with drinking something, and I still remember going there with a bunch of friends, and they were all being a bit gung-ho, getting some Belgian Trappist beer that was some obscene 11%, I think it was, and the guy behind the bar was like, well, you know, you drink this in thirds, it's fine, and no, we're having it in pints, we're drinking pints of this stuff, and I don't think anybody actually finished it because it was just way too much. Oh.
What the feck is Tibble's Nibbles?
What else does it need to have? Decent spirit selection. How big does a spirit selection need to be? Do you just want the standards?
So you've kind of moved into my specialist topic really now by talking about pubs and drinking. A pub should be about the beer.
It absolutely
should be about the beer. Why go to a pub and drink a gin and tonic when you can make a gin and tonic at home?
But can't you say the same thing about beer? Because you can just go and buy bottles of beer of 5 points or whatever. Does it taste different out of the barrel?
Absolutely it tastes different. Like draft beer tastes different.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a gin and tonic, I mean, you can't really taste the gin in a pub with 25ml. You need a decent inch in the bottom of the glass. It is cool. Like, I'll go back to the Albion. They now have their own distillery in the back. So they're actually brewing, distilling their own gin. And I like whiskey to kind of finish off. I'm a big fan of a chaser. When you're a bit, say, tight of cash or something, it's like there is no point drinking wine or spirits in a bar, in my opinion.
Yes.
Because it's the beer that tastes different, and that's why I want to go to a pub. Otherwise, I'd be quite happy to stay in lockdown with a few cans.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So the hot fuzz choice of wine being white or red is fair enough?
I mix them together, mate. I quite like a rosé. And in fact, I spent a whole summer on a low-carb diet having a large glass of rosé in a pint glass with ice to make it reach the top. So I just drink pints of rosé in an afternoon.
You're a very classy man, but we knew this already. To be fair, when I worked for Gallo back in the day, rosé on the rocks was a thing that they tried to push. I don't think it ever quite caught on, but it was...
Oh, it did in my world.
That was the inspiration that you needed.
Going back to what you just said though about the beer, it's like you're saying about food. It's exactly the same as the food. Like, let's bring it back to food. You can cook yourself fish and chips at home.
Yes.
Why would you choose to go out for it? I can drink a bottle of Stella at home. If I'm drinking a bottle of Stella in a pub, fine. But if I'm getting it on draft, it does taste different.
Yeah.
It's been given to you. It's not, you haven't had to put the work in.
Yeah.
The middle ground is food-wise getting a takeaway.
Yeah.
Or, as I said, you know, getting a takeout of the draft beer from the
pub. And do you think, given that lockdown is going to change significantly the way that we shop, the way that we consume, the way that we eat, do you think people are going to get used to getting takeout from the pub? Do you think people, when the lockdown finishes, and hopefully it will at some point, people have been getting their beer from the pub in milk jugs, in whatever, by growlers or however it is they choose to buy them? Do you think people are going to keep doing that?
I think some people will. I don't know that many pubs that are doing it, to be honest. Where I live in Walthamstow, there's a couple of craft beer shops.
Yeah.
And they have their own draft system inside the shop. So yeah, they'll sell you a growler from a shop, but it tastes like it's draft beer.
Yes. And you have to drink that fairly quickly. Or you drink it fairly quickly.
You don't have to drink it as quickly as I drink it. But, you know, I mean, in theory...
What do you mean, on the way home?
I mean, in theory, the growler is the... I can't even remember the quantity, because it's a weird quantity, because it's also, because it's American, it's based on American pints. So in this country, it's a really, it's something like 2.78 litres or something.
That's really ridiculous.
Yeah. But I think a growler is 4 American pints. Yeah, 4 American pints.
Right, okay.
Which are, oh, you're testing.
They're smaller now, aren't they, I think.
483, I think, something like that. They're 400 and something mil, where ours are definitely 568.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I have to say, there's a couple of things that I'm a bit sad that Americans seem to have brought over. One is the growler. Seems to be.
Yeah, it's a great name, though, isn't
it? It's a good name.
It's a great name.
To be fair, that was almost the name of the podcast.
The growler.
It was the hairy growler. Yeah. Because I had a bit of a growly voice when I first started doing this. Just the rise of the IPA. Ugh. When I did drink IPAs, it just tastes like drinking perfume.
See, I like IPAs, but I went and I thought they were really great. And then, do you remember I stopped drinking for about 8 months?
Yeah.
And now I find them a bit too much. I prefer a pale ale.
Yes.
But I still do like a DIP. I like the really strong ones.
Yeah. But they're, 8%? So they're very different territory from that sort of...
Well, I think the sweet... Because normally you remember like Tennent Super or something when we were students.
Yeah, yeah.
Or homeless. It's too sweet.
Yeah.
But I think the sweetness, a strong IPA, yeah, I think the sweetness balances the hoppiness.
I was always a case cider man, I have to say myself, when I wanted to get utterly ruined. I never quite made it down to Frosty Jack's.
I had some the other day, case cider. It's, of course, it's what's nice about it is that it's not dry.
Yeah, it's still not quite the most pungent that I've ever had, which was the Chiddick cider from the Chiddick Cider Circle in Dorset, made famous by River Cottage, Hugh Fernie-Whitting store, which was at a Bridport Food and Beer Festival, which is well worth a visit if you ever find yourself in that area. I think it's early, middle June.
Not this year, it is.
Not this year, though, sadly. All the other beers and ciders had, you know, very nice tasting notes. You know, it tastes like a summer meadow with, you know, whatever, burnt flip-flop, whatever it is they've decided to call it. The Chiddick one literally just had on it Chiddick cider between 13 and 15%. Be careful. The first third of a pint went down like drinking lighter fluid. Like it was like something out of With Nell and I. The second one was significantly better. By that point, I was very drunk.
I was going to say, three of those, you don't know how you got home, surely.
No, I drank two and I was very wobbly.
Yes, because it's wine strength.
Yeah, it is essentially. I mean, they have the ancient right to pick up all the deadfall apples around Chiddick, and so they do, and just turn it into cider, and they just make it themselves. It is one of those things where the first one is tough, but it becomes much better, which I think is the true of a lot of stronger beers that I used to drink. I always struggle the first one down, but once you sort of your taste buds have got used to it.
Yeah, I think you're right with ciders, especially as well. There was a, I do like a rough cider, really do like a rough cider.
Yeah, I did get my own commemorative old Rosie tankard back in the day because I drank so much of it in my local.
That's probably now the mainstream rough cider, isn't it? Westerns, I think.
Yeah, I think it is Westerns.
Out near my parents, been around there. Yeah. There was one, it was from Wales. It was a Welsh cider.
Okay.
It came in a polythene container.
Right.
Tasted of polythene. It was about 8.5%. It was from the Grape and Grain in
Crystal Palace.
Crystal Palace, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. A great pub.
Yes. Which has sadly fallen to the dark side.
It's properly fallen to the dark side because it was supposed to have been bought by the dark side, but it's just, as long as I know, still sitting empty.
Well, that's an absolute tragedy.
The irony being, of course, it was bought by Witherspoon, so out of all the pubs, it should now be open because it were the only ones. But yeah, that cider was great. And I can remember going there and having one or two and then not remembering how to go.
Yeah, there is something about cider, isn't it?
But what was nice about it is that it wasn't a dry cider.
Yeah.
And I think that's the mistake that a lot of people make, is cider has to be dry. I think it's because of those arrows that hit the table and things, because that's quite a big marketing campaign.
Yes.
It's got to be strong. It's got to be dry.
Yes.
And it's got to be... But I actually prefer a medium.
I was quite a big fan of Woodpecker back in the day. And that's really dragging up. I mean, God, when was the last time you saw Woodpecker in a pub?
Again, when I was working in the Virgin Tavern.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to drink that every time I fancied something other than beer.
Mm. Oh, I think...
That was a lovely beer. That was a lovely cider, actually. I like that a lot.
Well, you can tell that we've got that sort of slightly West Midlands country thing going on, because it's very unfashionable to drink cider still.
Mm.
Yeah, I got a lot of time for it. Especially when I was doing touring theatre down in Devon.
Mm.
We'd go to local places, do a show, and then the locals would invite us back to the pub for a few drinks afterwards. You know, being actors on tour, you're not going to say no, are you? And of course, suddenly you got your alpha male, farmer, drinker, stereotypical people, but they're all drinking cider, not beer. Whereas in anywhere else in the country, those kind of people would think that cider was a woman's drink or something, you know, and it's got to be in a stemmed glass and all that kind of crap. Cider is very much a de rigueur of everybody in that sort of area.
Because I mean, we pretty much lived on the border, didn't we, really, between the West Midlands and the West Country. So we were pretty much on the border between beer and cider, and that did make for very interesting... Wasn't there the urban legend that in Worcester they weren't allowed to serve snake bites? I remember hearing that.
Blast from the past, yeah.
Yeah, when was the last time I had a snake bite?
Well, Exeter University, I would suggest.
Yeah, that didn't end well, did it?
Snakey bees.
Snake bite and blacks, yeah, it's always the... It's always the black currant that made you ill. It wasn't the 15 pints that went with it.
Yeah, I think it was also because your vomit was black afterwards. I remember having to clear it up out the toilets every blooming night, you know. I used to be squeamish about all that sort of stuff. You know, a couple of nights working in the Lemon Grove at X University.
Oh, the good old Lemmy. I wonder if it's probably still the same, isn't it?
No.
It's never been that bad again.
No. We've really gone off topic. We're just talking about drinks now.
We should do, and that's exactly how it should be.
Time's gone by.
Yeah. So let's summarise then.
Yeah, let's wrap it. Yeah, let's
wrap it. So come on then. Let's in a couple of sentences, what makes a good pub?
Good beer, good food, and it's having a landlord. Sorry, I don't mean that in a non-gender landlord.
Yes.
Know, having a land person, if I know, but a boss that isn't a manager, someone that actually owns the place and cares about the place and isn't just a worker. That's what I think.
I think that's a good summary. I don't think I could actually say it better myself.
So let me give you a summary.
Yeah.
Top three pubs you've been to eat.
Ooh, that's a very good question. I think definitely in my top three is the Colonel Fawcett. I think the food there is excellent. I think the beer is lovely. It's obviously run by people who really care. I'm going to keep it relatively local, I think. The Dewdrop Inn in Lower Broadheath near Worcester. I went there about 3 years ago and I still remember the food. I thought it was really very good and a nicely run place as well. Mm-hmm. Quite welcoming. And this is the challenge, isn't it? Because you sort of go to places and you go to pubs and you sort of, as you say, they sort of tend to merge into one unless they're your actual local. But
that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
Because when you go to a pub, you don't want to be working hard to try and go on new experiences.
Yes.
All you want to be doing is going, well, you want to just spend your effort maybe trying a different drink, but in a kind of ilk that you like. You don't want to be having to work hard and plough through a menu of food things that you're not familiar with.
Yes, exactly.
It's about socializing.
Yes.
You know, and feeling comfortable.
So it's almost a good pub is a good background to other things happening.
Yes. Well said.
And I think that's really good. The other one actually that really impressed me was the Vobster Inn in Vobster, which is in Somerset. I was super impressed with that and I would definitely like to go back and try some other food that's in there as well.
I know the one thing that I really hanker for is a proper country pub.
Yes.
And I think that's living in London, you can't get proper country pubs. Because even the pubs that have a bit of a garden stuff, you can't take dogs to.
Yeah, or they've really rammed the tables in. You know, it's not like you think about something like go to the camp just outside Hallow, you know, and you had probably 15, 20, 30 tables in maybe 2 acres of land right down by the river.
Hopefully they're doing a roaring trade now because that sounds like it's the right sort of social distance
perfect
from
social
each
distancing.
Other.
Yeah. They might not be allowed to do the whole thing that they did when I remember when I used to go there where you have to leave one of your shoes behind a bar. So that you didn't steal the glasses.
Sorry, hang on. No, you're going to have to explain that a little bit more, Mr. T, because that makes absolutely no sense. And I'm a local to that area.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it may well be a Worcestershire thing, but the guy who owned the pub, I think they got a lot of walkers coming along the river because it was along the River Severn.
Like ramblers?
Yeah, like ramblers. Mm-hmm. I think they had a problem of people walking away with their very nice new glasses and their new glassware. So in order to get around, you had to leave your shoe behind the bar. That's not actually the most unusual story about the camp. The other one was when because the camp pub itself is on like a little bit of a hill. When the pub used to get flooded, all the area around the pub and the car park used to get flooded. But
I think
the pub itself didn't.
I think there were some shots of that quite recently that I saw online.
Yeah, and the landlord used to come and get you in his canoe and take you to the pub so you could go drinking.
Oh, that's
it was
brilliant.
Absolutely outstanding.
That reminds me of the, you know, you were talking about Chiswick earlier.
Yeah.
Because obviously I used to work at Latimer.
Yes.
And there's that little bit by the river where it floods up because it's tidal.
Yeah.
And so there's that pub there just into Chiswick where the water, you know, you can't, you know, near the Fuller's Brewery.
Oh, yeah,
where
yeah.
Where it basically floods out. Every time the river comes up, it floods out.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the name of that place. What was the one that we used to go to just by Latimer? Is it the Ruby something?
The one that we saw Welsh Bond and James May in.
Yes, that was one of the most exciting days of my life seeing Timothy Dalton. In fact, it's his birthday today.
What
I think, or yesterday, well, Timothy Dalton. I think he's 72. So happy birthday if you're listening.
Hope you're isolating if you're 72.
Yeah, no, definitely, because he'll be a national treasure. We don't want to lose him. So that's
arguably the best. Oh no, we won't do Bond. We'll digress to top five Bond films another time.
Yeah, I think that's an entirely different podcast, let alone a different show.
Have you done your top three, or have you just?
Yeah, pretty much.
Have you just filibustered your way through?
No, I've done three there. I think
Holt Heath. That was a pub I used to go to with my grandparents for food. That's probably the first. What's the first one you went to? I'd say Holt Heath might be one of the first pubs I went to for pub food.
Yeah, I mean it depends what counts. We used to go to the Timberdine, which was a Toby Grill.
Notice we haven't talked about Toby Grills or Carveries or Harvesters or anything.
That's
like
a
that.
Very good point. So that's not a pub. That's
we mentioned. I mean, I said the F word earlier, but the worst word I said was spoons, which I won't bleep that one out, but I should.
I'll tell you what, I think it probably was one of the things we used to do, the Stapleton Arms in Buckhorn Western, which I think is quite possibly one of the most West Country names for any place.
It's almost going to be said with the bro, go and give it a try.
I'm not even going to try. What, the Stapleton Arms in Buckhorn
nice.
Western.
Nice one, babe. Get on there.
And that was an absolute classic sort of pub with a landlord that was very well known. But I think probably the first one I went to was actually the Plough, which was a decent walk away from the house. And I think we went up there and walked and had lunch when I was probably about 7 or 8, because the first restaurant I went to was a curry house, which has probably set the tone for the rest of my life.
Yeah, me too. And we'll save that for the we should actually work it, in which case that's beautiful, because I remember going to a curry house as well when I was about 5 or 6, and I have a great story about that, so we could do that one then.
Oh,
Tibbles Nibbles, the Amateur Food Review.
Thank you for listening to part 2 of episode 1 of Tibbles Nibbles Lockdown Edition. I look forward to next time when we're going to be talking burgers. You can always drop me an email on tibblenibbles@gmail.com, or you can have a look on my Instagram, which is tibblenibbles blog. If you happen to see us on Facebook, I'm on Facebook as well, under Tibble Nibbles. Let me know what your favourite pub is, particularly in London. It would be good to go and try some when this whole lockdown is over. Thanks very much for your time, and I look forward to speaking to you next time.